tweet at TodaySOR.
Ireland's foremost centre for addiction treatment, the Rutland Centre in Knocklyon in Dublin, is celebrating its 40th birthday this year. Over 10,000 people have received treatment there since it opened in 1978, and now the centre is encouraging some of these people to give recovery a voice by sharing their stories. I'm joined now by two people who have agreed to share their story of dealing with a cocaine addiction. Stephen and Rachel, you're very welcome to the studio. Rachel, tell us how you first got together with Stephen.
I met him in my first job, and yeah, we just became friends, and then we ended up going out together. Yeah.
And Stephen, what was your What was your life like before you met Rachel?
I was working. I was young. I was, normal young lad in terms of being around Dublin. If you were to look at who I was in terms of my social aspect, I would have hung around with the boys and we would have drank an awful lot. Around the time at that as well, I would have been very involved in, involved is probably not the right word, but in the rave scene, where I would have been out every weekend. There would have been drink, taking ecstasy. And at the time it was quite normal. There wasn't anything within my world that felt...
You were both still teenagers at this stage, were you, in your late teens?
Yeah.
Right.
So when we got together, I kind of, like, I had, at that stage, the rave scene, we were grown out of it as such, you know, like, in terms of all my friends were moving on. We were also getting together. When we were young, we were in a relationship.
That wouldn't have been my scene at all. Like, so when I came around, I think that's nearly when it stopped, the ecstasy taken around. You know, that wasn't my scene. It wasn't something I was interested in. So it kind of took you away from that a little bit.
And would you have gone to some of the rave parties, that kind of thing as well?
No, I mean, I would have went to nightclubs and things like that, but it wouldn't have been my scene at all.
And when you say you were drinking heavily and using ecstasy, but were you still able to make it to work on a Monday morning?
I was still going to work on a Monday morning. Probably being younger and not much responsibilities, there probably could have been a lot of sick Mondays. But again, it wasn't and didn't feel that abnormal at the time. When I look back now, it was very abnormal. It wasn't normal behaviour that was going on. A lot of my life centred around drink, drugs, the social aspect, like a lot of young people, going out and growing up. So it's when we got together and the relationship really started to develop and the rave scene had finished.
Was that something that you said, okay, this is going to change my life, I'm going to become a dad, right? Time to grow up a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, it would have most definitely been. The relationship was very strong as well, I have to say that at the time. You know, we were really good friends. We were starting out in life. And it was time for me to make changes then.
Making them, it seems, Rachel.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, now just tell me this about the cocaine. Do you remember when you started using cocaine first?
Yeah, I do. It was interesting. Between over the years, the drink for me would have always been there. Do you know the way drink would have always been a factor in terms of my life. There would have been issues, between us in terms of the relationship, arguments in terms of me, going out, getting drunk, not knowing when to stop drinking, that sort of stuff. Then I was out one morning. It was a work event. It was an end of a job event that was happening and we were drinking. The drinking was starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I knew within myself that I wasn't going to be able to last the pace for the full day.
10 o'clock in the morning until closing time.
Until closing or till whatever. I knew by that afternoon that I'd be drunk, so there was some of the company there. There was cocaine. One of the fellas had it. I approached him. I knew they had it. I took a line, took a couple of lines. I can't remember how many I took that day. But what I did notice was that I was still drinking all day and I was well able to last the pace. I suppose something within me that they, I suppose if you look at it, felt like it was a master plan to a degree, that if I just took a couple of lines of cocaine when I was drinking, I'd be able to last longer in the drink. And that was the vision at the beginning. And then that kind of lasted for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months. And then all of a sudden, the cocaine for me then began to start take over, in terms of it was no longer just associated to drinking. It was coming during the week, when I had a few bob, when it was payday, at any stage.
How much were you spending between alcohol and cocaine at this stage?
I suppose the alcohol, in a sense, I suppose I would have been very hidden in an awful lot of my addiction. So the alcohol would have been very much what we were doing together, which possibly would have been a Friday night or a Saturday night. So it wouldn't have been overly extensive. In terms of the cocaine, I suppose in the height of it, there could be weekends where there was weeks where there were 400 or 500 euro being spent.
Yeah,
and it was Celtic Tiger times as well, where for me the money, I could kind of hide some of the money. The money wasn't necessarily, it wasn't having a huge impact within our paying bills. But yeah, there was a huge amount.
And Rachel, did you notice much different about the way Stephen was behaving? Like, did you sort of spot anything about his behaviour or his demeanour?
Yeah, I definitely did. In the end, he became withdrawn and moody and just not interested in our family life, really. And that was very unlike him.
But before that, was there a time when he was maybe a little bit more outgoing?
Yeah, before that, I mean, the drink was always a little bit of an issue. It would be a cycle, kind of a 4-month cycle where, you know, he'd give up after a discussion, and then he'd slowly but surely start back on maybe bottles instead of pints, and then it would end up in the same thing. And then there was a point where he did go back on the bottles and the pints, but he wasn't getting drunk. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe he's able to handle it now, or maybe he's a different relationship with it now. And obviously that was when the cocaine had kicked in. But I was totally unaware of that.
And Stephen, how long did it take you to become a full-blown addict, in your view?
It's kind of hard to, when it really started to control me. It was within a few months, and I knew
that quick.
Yeah, I knew that there was a major problem going on. And like in it, there was a part of me who didn't know whether it was mental health. I had a mental health issue. And there's a part of me felt that I would be institutionalised. There was another part that didn't know whether I was just a bad person. I was just turning into this bad person who was doing these bad things on his family, and very, very difficult place to be in.
Rachel, what brought it to a head?
Well, at the end, I remember saying to go to the doctor and see what was wrong, and he did that, and then it continued, and then eventually I noticed money had gone missing from our account. And when I asked him about it, he said it wasn't him. So I actually thought that the cards had been skimmed or something. So I went to the guards to get them to check, and all that was going on in the background. And eventually one day then he came and told me that it was
at the end of what seems to have been a nice family kind of a day, was it?
Yeah, and we had gone out for a meal and had a lovely day out, and I think he'd made the decision that he was going to tell me that day, but he wanted me to realise that, you know, we still have this wonderful family, and there's still something kind of worth fighting for, I suppose. So at the end of that day is when he told me. Yeah.
How did you tell her?
How did I tell her? I just, because the money thing had happened, you know, so we were in a situation, and it was just I can remember it as if it was yesterday, and it was, I just said the money, it was me. And in fairness to Rachel, she said, is it for drugs? And I said, yeah. And she nearly dropped, in fairness to her, like, in shock.
And you responded how?
I don't know where the question, you know, was it drugs came from. Maybe subconsciously I had some idea, but it certainly wasn't something that was in my conscious thinking. And then my response was really, we were just finished the day up, let's go home, get the kids to bed, and very kind of normal, as if nothing had happened, went home and basically said, pack your bags, that's the end of us, you're not sticking around, I'm not having my children witness this, and you need to go and get help. At the same time, I, you know, still loved them, and but I was in total shock. I'd kind of gone into close down, you know, my own for my own protection. And at the same time, I rang his parents and said, you know, this is what's after happening. You need to come over and get him, because I didn't want to send him out in case anything happened. He was in a very low and vulnerable place. But I knew, or I thought at that point, well, that's it.
How did you react to that, Stephen?
I suppose I was probably in a bit, I was in shock myself, but I knew that that was what was wanted, and that's what
and
needed to
And did it surprise you, though, that your wife said, OK, pack your bags, you're out?
No, it didn't. It didn't at the time, because, like, I knew, like, at the time that what did had you? Happened wasn't OK.
And that she wasn't the kind of person who would put up with that?
Yeah, and it was the right thing to do, at the time, like, and then I suppose for me it was like there was a number of massive wake up calls that happened, but that was one, and then the other one was I was 31 years of age, a dad with two children at that time, and I was over at my mum and dad's on a couch, going, "What the hell has happened?" Do you know what I mean? Like, and it was a huge turning point and a huge factor. And
how quickly then did you make contact with the Rutland Centre?
Well, again, in fairness to having support, and Rachel came over to me the next day and said to me, listen, she said, there's two ways this can go. She said, one is, she said, you ring, you look for help. Do you know what I mean? You ring the Rutland Centre and you look for help. Or the other one is you continue on what you're doing and you're not coming home. So the decision for me was, and there was a big part of me at the time that was, I wanted to change. I didn't want things to go on the way they were. I said okay, and I made the call and the assessment. So the call was made that afternoon. The assessment was on, I think that was a Monday. So the assessment was on a Wednesday, I think. Yeah, I can't kind of fully sure.
Yeah.
But it was fairly quick.
And what was the program like? I mean, you went in there as a resident?
I went in there as a resident, yeah. I suppose I needed to, and I went in thinking that they were going to fix me and tell me everything that I needed to do, which they did, but I didn't realise I had to do the work. The programme in there, and for me going in there, it was the first time I actually was sitting in a group of people who were all speaking the same language as me. People understood what was going on. I was challenged around my behaviours. I had to take responsibility for where my addiction had brought me. I had to have to realise that the whole world wasn't about me. Do you know what I mean? That it was about my wife, my children, my family. And probably, like, for me, one of the biggest turning points in there was a conversation that we had around our eldest daughter at the time. And what do you tell her? And where was I? And the conversation was that Rachel was explaining to her where I was, and she told her that Dad was in a place learning how to love you again. And our eldest daughter, she was 8 at the time, burst out into tears.
Yeah.
And for me, that was just such a...
Just hearing that.
That was a massive moment, the impact that was having on her as a kid.
And difficult for you to have that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I didn't realise that, you know, it had had such an effect maybe on the kids, because I had overcompensated in every area kind of our family life. But I knew it was important to say something to her. And what I said was, you know, Dad has gone in, he loves us very much, but he has forgotten how to show it, and they're going to teach him again how to show us how he loves us.
And what about your own involvement then, Rachel, in the recovery process?
Yeah, I went actually to the assessment with Stephen, and, you know, that was very informative. And then I went to all the family days, which were on a Tuesday, and I was lucky enough that I had a lot of support from my own family and my workplace to be able to attend them. So I was able to get some education, I suppose, on addiction, but also be around family, other family members that knew what I was going through, and just get that support
in that way. And what about, I suppose, dealing with situations? One thing to say, OK, he wants to stop, but that's really the beginning or stage two of the journey. How was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, when he came out of the Rutland, you know, I really didn't realise that there was going to be a huge amount of work on his part and my part to help recovery on its way, you know, and the fact that he had to go out to meetings and stuff like that, I really didn't understand that. And I thought, well, I've been looking after the family for so long and now you've gone into treatment, you're back out and you're doing the same thing again, going off.
And were there things that you learned and maybe had to work on about, say, your own communication, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. At the end of active addiction, I had taken over kind of both roles in a way in the family and, a little bit of control maybe of what was going on. And I had to learn to allow Stephen back in, you know, as the great brilliant dad that he is, to take part in the family again. And, that was difficult at the beginning because... you know, maybe near the end of addiction, he wasn't doing things up to, you know, the standard that I wanted. But, you know, I had to learn that actually I was overcompensating. So my standards were actually too high for both of us.
And how long were you a resident in Rutland?
At the time, it was 6 weeks.
6 weeks, right. Yeah, and, I mean, have you had any slips or close shaves, so to speak, since you've been there?
Yeah, like I have been... It's nearly 13 years now. I've never relapsed into drink or drugs. That doesn't mean to say that I never wanted drink or drugs over the last 13 years. Around 4 years into recovery, I had a kind of a major wobble in terms of self-esteem, who I was, where was my life going. And I think really what has supported me throughout all of that and throughout the last 13 years is one is the relationship that we have, but also... the support of people in recovery, people who are willing to support and give that support, a lot of it free. Do you know the way? Like, we have met some wonderful, fantastic people over the years.
And do you miss that party life?
No, there isn't a part of me now that doesn't miss it. Like, my life over the last has been a hell of a lot better than it ever was.
Yeah. And what about your girls? I mean, you've two daughters, right? And the older one now must be the girl who at the age of 7 was told,
yeah,
you know, your dad's going to have to find out how to love us a bit better.
Yeah, yeah.
She was obviously, 20 or 19 or 20,
yeah,
that kind of age now?
20, yeah. They have a great relationship. She's probably going to be following, you know, in her dad's footsteps in regards to kind of caring profession, and she's very, I mean, she knows what happened now. She knows the real story, I suppose. And
do you think she's a wiser young woman maybe than she might otherwise have been when she's going out for a weekend,
absolutely,
or an evening?
Yeah, I mean, she's very normal as well. You know, she likes to go out with her friends and enjoy herself. But I suppose what she does know is that if there ever is an issue or a problem, that she can come and talk to us, that we have some knowledge around anything if it ever comes up for her, and she won't be afraid to do so.
Well, look, it's a wonderful story of recovery and resilience and giving back, because I know you work with other people as well.
Yeah.
That's part of what you do now at this stage, Stephen.
Yeah, it has been a part of something, the decision I made in my recovery was to kind of make, to change and alter my life and where I want to go. And I went back to study, and I now have, I've been very fortunate in terms of I got employment in the addiction field and work, and I got a bit of part-time work in one of the universities, and I do a lot of voluntary work. I'm involved in an event that's happening on Saturday, which is the Recovery Walk, which is a day of celebrating recovery from addiction.
Well, look, congratulations on all of that. Stephen and Rachel, thank you indeed for your honesty and continued good wishes to you. Very best to you. We'll have more after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.